Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Okay. Welcome to the show today, everybody. I'm so excited. We have something new that we're going to try this summer and see how it goes. I have a friend that I met teaching in Browning, Montana, and she lives in Missoula, and she has a business called The Kitchen in Missoula. And so I asked her if she would come on and talk to listeners about cooking with organic food. So I think on Fridays, we're going to have a special episode just dedicated to cooking with things that you, might either get from your CSA or things that you've grown in your garden or things you're hearing about on the show that you want to try. So we're going to see how it goes. So welcome to the show, Marissa. I'm so excited that you're here.
Well, thank you for having me, Jackie.
And so I just kind of gave a brief introduction. Do you want to tell listeners a little more about your business? And then we were going to talk about the stuff you got at the CSA today, right?
Absolutely. I run a business called The Kitchen in Missoula. And so far, it's been just word of mouth, catering events and weddings and doing some fundraisers for people. But starting this fall, we are going to have a home delivery dinner service where you can go onto our website and there will be four or five options for you to choose from. And you can order dinner. If you order by 1 o'clock, we can do same day delivery, and there'll be freezer meal options and gluten-free and vegetarian options. So a little something for everybody. And then we deliver to your door by 6 p.m. and they're going to be meals that feed 6 to 8 people. So if you're a single person or just a couple, you can have dinner and then leftovers for a few more meals. Or if you have a really big family and you're a really busy person, you can just have dinner on the table and not have to worry about making it yourself.
And the best part is, one, Marissa is an amazing cook. I have tasted her food and you cannot go wrong. And two, a lot of the things will be like organic vegetables that are grown locally. I know Marissa shops at the farmer's market in Missoula a lot, and you have your CSA you're going to talk to us about today.
So yeah, I do try to cook everything as local and organic as possible. One of my childhood friends from Missoula is Mong, and she has a family stall down at the market. So I'll just call her a few days ahead of time and she'll have everything set up for me that I need for cooking that weekend. It's really important to me to know, who grows my food if I'm not growing it. The CSA that I'm a part of this summer, I'm splitting it with a few other people. And I actually used to teach with the person's sister who runs it's called Harlequin Produce. It's out of Arlee. And his sister used to teach with us up in Browning. So I like that I know my farmer. It's pretty fantastic.
Excellent. So, all right. So tell her, what'd you get at the CSA this week?
Well, so this week, I love it. It's kind of like opening a present every week because you never know what you're going to get. So this week we got some broccoli, zucchini, cucumbers, some snap peas, a big old bag of spinach and a big old bag of mixed greens. We also got a bunch of basil, but because I have so much basil in my garden, I let the people I share the CSA with take all the basil. And we also got a couple of eggplants. And according to Harlequin Produce's website, it's the earliest they've ever had eggplant, which is kind of a theme around here this summer. I actually have tomatoes that are turning red already in my garden, which has never happened before. So I'm going to have to stock up pretty soon on canning goods and get going. And so my plans for the CSA, the mixed greens and the spinach are always good just to throw in smoothies every morning. They add zero flavor and so many nutrients. You can't even taste them. It makes your smoothies a little bit of a weird color sometimes. But if you can always smell them and know that it's going to taste like the berries or the fruit that you put in it and not the greens that you put in it. And it's a really easy way for me to, one, eat my breakfast on the go, and two, get a lot of fruits and vegetables in one fell swoop. A couple other things, the broccoli, one of my favorite things to do with fresh broccoli. And I do this with asparagus or green beans as well. But those two are more so spring. And I do those in the oven. But what I'll do is take the crown of broccoli and set the crown side down in a marinade of soy sauce, sesame oil, a little bit of rice vinegar, and then some chili flakes and garlic, and just kind of rub the crown around in that for a few minutes. usually no more than 10 because the soy is so salty that it tends to oversalt it if you leave it for more than 10 minutes. And then you just go grill the broccoli. You have your grill on, you know, charcoal gas, whatever kind you use. And you can grill the broccoli crowns right on it. And it gives these beautiful grill marks. And, you know, it only takes a couple minutes and then you can take it off and then chop it off so that everybody can get a little bit of broccoli. And we do that with asparagus on the grill and that same marinade. We'll put that marinade in a big Ziploc bag and just break off the woody ends of the bottoms of the asparagus. I am one of those people that likes really thin, tender asparagus, whereas I know a lot of people like the thicker stalks, but the thinner the better in my book for asparagus. And you just soak them in that marinade for 10 minutes again and put them on the grill until they turn that beautiful bright green color. And then you eat them. I don't think they even ever make it to the plate. We just literally put them on the serving plate and eat them with our fingers right off of it.
I know my mouth's watering already. Just listening.
I know. it's such an easy marinade to do. We use it all year round. I use it for green beans in the oven in the wintertime. You know, same thing. It's maybe a couple, I'd say 4 tablespoons of soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of sesame oil, and just a splash of the vinegar if you want it. You don't even need it really. And sometimes I'll put honey in it if I want just a little sweetness to it. But then a good big pinch of chili flakes and about a clove or two of garlic. And it's a simple, quick, delicious marinade for anything. It goes well with chicken and pork too.
And sesame oil is such an amazing flavor. Like if you have never tried using sesame oil, I totally recommend listeners try that because that really can change and just really add a lot of flavor to meals.
It really does. And I have 2 favorites. One, we have this restaurant here called Vietnam Noodle, and they have a little Vietnamese grocery store set up in the front of their restaurant. And so that's where I'll go and get sriracha and sesame oil. And it's like, I mean, it's got the writing on it in Vietnamese. I have no idea. You know, it says sesame oil, but I have no idea what anything else says. But I can tell you it's the best toasted sesame oil I've ever had, and it's affordable.
Nice.
But for people who might want something organic, Spectrum has a really nice toasted sesame oil. And we can get it at the good food store. It's like 10 bucks, and you can get it, you know, at Whole Foods or wherever you have a natural grocery store. But it's a great, great oil to use for anything, really anything Asian that you cook. I've been really into like lemon tahini sauces lately or, you know, Asian marinades because it lends itself so much to using vegetables and it just really, that's all we're eating right now because we have so many. So why not do what's going to taste really great?
Excellent. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about?
Let's see what else. Oh, we had eggplant in the CSA. And it's great. So I go pick it up from my friend's office and she's splitting it up with me as we're going through everything. And she was going to give me all the eggplant. I was like, why would you do that? I don't want all the eggplant. Like you get some of it too. She's like, well, I have no idea how to cook it. I have no idea what to do with it. It's always a soggy mess. There's a really easy trick to fixing this. All you do. So if you're going to grill it or saute it or whatever, I mean, I'll be honest, my favorite way to eat eggplant is slathered in mozzarella and marinara and putting it on top of a salad. That is absolutely my favorite way to do it. But if you want to be a little healthier and you really do like eggplant, what you do, you slice it up and you just sprinkle a little salt on it for, you know, 20, 30 minutes. And that brings the moisture up out of it. And so then
you put it like on a paper towel or on a strainer or just on a plate or...
I usually put them I leave them on my cutting board and just sprinkle the salt over them.
Cool.
You know, cause I'll slice it from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. Cause one thing I do like to do, I like to make this spicy, it's like a Greek mixture. It's mint, feta, some olives, some red chili peppers, and it's sort of like a little filling. And then you thinly slice the eggplant, and grill it. And then you roll the filling up in the eggplant. And that's like a little vegetarian appetizer that's really full of flavor. But so the eggplant, the way to get it crispy or whatever on the grill, or in the oven, whatever, however you're going to cook it, is to sprinkle that salt and let it bring the moisture up for 20 to 30 minutes, and then just pat it down dry with a paper towel or a, you know, a flour sack, whatever you use in your kitchen for that. And then you can brush it with olive oil or whatever kind of oil you want to use that, encourages a high heat. Avocado oil works, grapefruit oil or grape seed oil, and coconut oil are all three great options if you're going to have it come in contact with a high heat point. So if you're going to fry it, those all work. If you're going to grill it, and I just like, I'm a huge fan of grill marks, and it, I have taken so many years trying to perfect my grilling game, and we sold our house last year, and as our treat was a new grill, and this thing is so fancy and has all these bells and whistles, and I truly do use it more than my partner does. He was like, I've cooked a steak on it once. You use it every day. And as soon, I mean, I'll go out and grill in January. I don't care what the temperature is, but having grill marks on something to me adds such, it adds just another level of flavor that I really love. And I crave it when it's 10 degrees outside and the wind is howling. So when it is wonderfully beautiful out, I try to grill every day. And I also try to not cook in the house when it's above 90, simply because it's just so hot. So grilling is a great option for that. So sorry, that was a parenthetical aside about grilling.
That was excellent. I think people will like that. And well, I think a lot of people are going to relate. I've seen people grilling in Montana all winter long.
Oh, my gosh. I think everybody up here does it. And it's really, like, there. I mean, I remember living in Cut Bank, and the wind was howling, and somebody would have to stand in a certain spot next to the grill so the light wouldn't go out. You know, like, we had to cozy the grill up right to the backside of the house. And I'm like, oh, crap, let's not start a fire, but I really want a steak. And you just, you make it work. Mm-hmm. You make it work. And so eggplant, I think, is a vegetable that really lends itself to grilling because it's big enough that it's not going to fall through your grates. You know, you can get all those fancy little vegetable pans or whatever that you can buy at Ace Hardware. Weber has this huge line of things, and I'm more of a, you know, I'm going to try and put everything I can on the grill. Like, I don't, sometimes we wrap stuff in foil and bake it on the grill when it's too hot in the house to cook. Pretty much all the time. It's really, I had a wedding. I did the cupcakes and the wedding cake for a few weeks ago. And of course it was the week, it was, you know, 100+ degrees.
Oh no. Uh-huh.
And so one, I'm thinking, how in the world am I going to make this happen? Mostly with the frosting. And so I spent a whole afternoon watching YouTube videos and researching frostings about what would stand up in the heat longest. The American cream cheese buttercream and an Italian meringue were the two frostings that stood up best in heat. And I had already planned on making the cream cheese buttercream in the first place because it was a red velvet cake. So it worked out perfectly. But so what I was doing was getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and making all the cupcakes, making sure I had the oven turned off by 10 a.m. so that way the house didn't get too hot, because we have an 800 square foot house. Like, if the oven is on, the whole place heats up. And so that way it was still early enough to where I could have the doors open to get a breeze going. And by the time it got stinking hot out, I could shut everything down and have the oven off. Excellent. And even, you know, I've noticed because our house is so small, even if I turn a burner on the stove to cook something, it tends to heat up pretty quickly. So I really like that our grill has one gas burner on the side. So I will use that to heat things up in the winter or summertime too, simply because it's already hot outside. You know, turning a burner on out there is not going to make much of a difference, but inside it makes a world of difference.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, that sounds like great stuff. And I think that's true. A lot of people are kind of intimidated by eggplant, and it's such a shame. Eggplant's one of my favorite foods. I put
eggplant.
Is
it really?
In
yeah. I'm not a huge fan. Yeah. So I really, but I'm always a person who is, I'm like, you know, I give my partner John such a hard time about all the vegetables he doesn't like, because I mean, tell you what, you try to sneak zucchini into a man's eggs once and you never hear the end of it. And, but he's getting so much better after, you know, cause I'm like, just try it. Like, you've probably never had it cooked well. and just try it. And if you don't like it, I will never ask you to try it again. You know, an eggplant is kind of one of those things for me. If it's cooked well and cooked right, I will eat it all day long. But I think I had too many experiences when I was first teaching myself how to cook 15 years ago, where it was just too greasy or too soggy because I didn't know about the salt trick yet. And that single trick changed my perspective on eggplant. And I know I can at least make it delicious and edible now. So if I'm presented with these gorgeous organic eggplants that were grown, you know, 20 miles from my house, I'm going to try to do right by them and make them taste delicious. So I think that's something that, you know, there are so many. I grew up in a house where dinner was fish sticks, macaroni, cheese, and frozen corn. And that's, you know, it was the 80s. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My parents don't cook. I mean, that was their version of cooking. And it's so funny because my brother and I both turned out to be really great cooks. And we are self-taught. You know, but self-taught to me was me starting in college buying a box of Zatarain's red beans and rice because that was like foreign exotic food to me. And now I make my own red beans and rice, you know, with my own pork stock and all that jazz. And but it took me 15 years to get here of trying things out and getting a little more brave every time. And there are still some things that I'm not huge fans of. Lima beans, for one. I will never know that those won't even ever be in my house. I have nightmares about them because my grandparents had a farm in Kansas and my grandmother would not let us leave the table until we ate all our lima beans. And I would end up eating them whole and like swallowing them like big horse pills and just chugging milk. So I wouldn't even have to taste them. So yeah, it's, you know, everybody's got those things that they don't like. But I think if we give them a shot, it really works out. You know, my mom hates vegetables. And we were out for a really nice dinner the other night. John and I took them out for their 40th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And the restaurant we went to has an appetizer that's fried Brussels sprouts and cauliflower. Mm-hmm. Two vegetables which my mother venomously dislikes. And she tried it and she was like, oh, well, if they tasted like this all the time, I would eat these every day. I was like, so immediately I call my grandma. Like, mom just ate Brussels sprouts. She's like, oh my, how did you make that happen? I was like, don't worry about it, Grandma, but it happened. You know, there was also bacon in the dish, so I think that had something to do with it. But still, the woman ate Brussels sprouts after 62 years and liked them. So I will count that as a victory.
Cool. Excellent. That's interesting because you're such a cook. I never would have known. I thought you grew up in a house full of...
No. Bacon. My mom is a very talented baker. She makes this strawberry bread that is just incredible. And she still sends it to some of my college friends and roommates. Aww. She used to send a box of it to us for finals week every year. And everyone got their own little individual loaf of strawberry bread. Aww. And she still does that. Like, I have friends who live in Chicago now and they still request strawberry bread from my mom. And we've all tried to make it. And it's just impossible to make it as tasty as she does. But she'll make, you know, cookies or cookie bars. She'll make the pies at Thanksgiving and Christmas time only because I make everything else and she wants something to do. And I've been trying really hard to not just walk into her kitchen and try to take over because she gets very angry with me when I try to do that. She has, though, started allowing me when we go up there for, like, my dad will offer to grill hamburgers out or pork chops or whatever. I was like, hey, Dad, how about you go have a beer and I will man the grill? Because my dad's version of grilling is everything is well done, beyond well done in some cases. Because he just gets to chatting with his friends or whatever and completely forgets that there's meat on the grill. And he has this, oh, crap, the grill's smoking. Oh, I gotta go. And it's like, Dad, why don't you just let one of us do it? You know, we're happy to do it. And so they finally relented to letting us. My brother and I, and sometimes John, man the grill when we're up there. But those moments are few and far between. So yeah, we didn't really grow up cooking at all. She bakes, and my dad mostly makes dinner now because he's the retired person. He's the retired one out of the two of them. My mom still works. Mm-hmm. So he'll have dinner ready, when she gets home, but he definitely has his rotation of things that he does. And I tried to give him a new pot roast recipe because he's been using it's his pot roast is terrible. It's horrible. It made me a vegetarian for 7 years. This is a true story. He made it when I was 16, I think, 15 or 16. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to eat this, Dad. He's like, well, yeah, you will. It's dinner. And I was like, no, I'm a vegetarian. And we out-stubborned each other for 7 years. Like, I finally gave in when I was 23 and lived in Chicago, and I was at Portillo's. And my friend didn't know that I was a vegetarian, and he ordered me a Maxwell Street Polish dog. And that Polish dog changed my life. It had grilled onions and mustard on it, and I never looked back. I had just... And by vegetarian, it was a very loose vegetarian. It was like red meat was the only thing I didn't eat. I still ate chicken on occasion and fish on occasion. But I held strong to that. And still to this day, my dad will call me and invite me over for pot roast when he makes it. So, and I always politely decline. But I gave him a recipe for a new pot roast. I was like, Dad, just try it. Just follow it to a T and just try it and see how it is. And it literally, it's adding fresh thyme and fresh rosemary into your pot roast and some salt and pepper. Like, I wish people would know, if there's one thing I could change about people in their home cooking, it's that season your food. Season it early and season it often. And even just sticking a couple of sprigs of rosemary and thyme in that pot roast dish made a huge difference. So, you know, it doesn't have to be this huge change or this dramatic change. It can literally be adding one thing to your dish that just takes it and makes it a great dish. You know, and I don't think a lot of people understand that. And like understanding when you do grill meats, you know, setting it out and letting it come to room temperature, salt and pepper it. That's all it needs. You don't need to cover the flavor up. You know, there's different rules for different meats and different cuts, but it's always great to season all of them early and often. You know, and you can always adjust it at the end if you need more. But I think that's something that's vastly overlooked in home cooking. You know, people always ask me, you know, like, oh, this is so good. How'd you do this? Like, when I make chili, I season the onions and garlic with paprika and a little bit of cumin. You know, I season every layer. And I think that's what makes it so good. Because in one bite, you have 15 different layers of flavor. Instead of, you know, adding the onions and garlic and peppers and then beans and meat and then seasoning it just once at the very end, then you're not giving those the seasonings or the herbs any time to develop. You know, if you put them in at the very end, you're leaving no time for development of flavor. And I think that is a huge, like, even if you put your seasons and your spices in the middle of cooking as opposed to the end of it, I think it makes a huge difference. You know, red sauces, chilies, anything like that. I think that is a major, it's a small change that makes a big difference.
I always add my spices, like when I'm sauteing the garlic and onions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a perfect time to do it because then they get to, I mean, think about it. All those different flavors get to just simmer and meld and swim with all those other delicious flavors. Mm-hmm. And the longer they're in there, the better they taste.
My mom is a big cooker with herbs. She puts fresh herbs in everything. I come from like the opposite background. I come from like the mom who had the gourmet cook, and I don't really cook. So, well, awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing all these great tips and inspirations for people. Oh, I was going to ask you, do you just want to explain to listeners what a CSA is in case some of them may not know?
Yeah. What is CSA? Community share something?
I think it's community supported agriculture.
Okay. Thank you. I'm like, I don't even know what it stands for. But so
I only know because somebody just asked me recently.
So a CSA, there are a bunch of different growers cooperatives around Missoula and different organic farmers, basically. There's Clark Fork Market, there's Western Montana Grower Cooperative, there's Harlequin. And so what Harlequin does is, I think you have to sign up for it by April or May, and there's only a certain number of it, but you pay, I think for our large share, it's something like $450, but you get a weekly delivery of produce from the beginning of June to the end of September. So June, July, so 4 months of produce. And it changes with what's, you know, ripening and what's ready to pick. You know, so at the very beginning we were getting radishes and turnips and always lettuce. There's always lettuce. But, you know, as we get more towards August, we'll start getting tomatoes, I hope, and some squash and pumpkins. And so they have a couple delivery drops in Missoula. And we're splitting it with three other families or three other couples, because the four of us couples are, we're all very active, and we're like, we all have our own gardens, but we want to support Harlequin. So we thought if we did a big one and just split it, it would help them out and help us out. And I like the idea of a CSA because it's inspirational. You're like, okay, I have all this stuff. What am I going to make with it? You know, I am a person who tends to go to the grocery store and see what looks good and then make up a dinner in my head based on, you know, what kind of produce looks great or a great cut of meat I see. Like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this with it. You know, I have also been that person that plans a week's worth of meals out when I lived in Cutbank and had the time to cook all day Sunday. That's
and
what I did.
Didn't have to cook during the week. Didn't have.
Yeah, exactly. And I did that so that I didn't have to cook during the week. And, you know, and Cutbank was a special place in that the produce section was a bit lackluster. And I mean, I have the number memorized for cilantro because I always had to tell the checker what it was because they didn't know what it was when I brought it up to the cash register. And, you know, that's not their fault. Like, it's a meat and potatoes town. Let's call it that. You know, I think I did some of the most exotic cooking that place has ever seen.
Probably.
Especially with all the wind farmers coming over for dinner on Sunday nights. which was so fantastic. But so the CSA is great, and it lasts a couple months, and there's a couple CSAs. Western Montana Growers Co-op has one where you get dairy and meat as well. And there's a couple places that do like grain CSAs, so you can get Montana grown quinoa and barley and hops or whatever, wheat. And then Harlequin does this really cool thing too. It's called a winter stock up CSA. And I think it's in October that you get it. And we did it 2 years ago. And if I did it again, I would split it with another family, but it was onions, potatoes, squash, pumpkins, like all these beautiful root cellar vegetables. And, which would be great now because I actually have a root cellar in my house now.
You do?
Oh, yeah. Cool. Oh, yeah. So our house it's a old railroad flop house. It was built in 1904. And so the root cellar has stairs down to it. They did an addition a few years ago. And so that's where all my canned goods are and storage for like big baskets of potatoes and onions down there. But it's also where we do laundry and stuff. But yeah, I like that the people who owned it before I did had the foresight to expand the back of the house and make that an actual accessible part of the home, because it's a great place to put all that stuff. It's also great for wine. It keeps wine at a great temperature with
nice.
Hot out. But yeah, the year we did the winter store or winter stock up CSA, we had a really terrible freeze pretty early on, like early December. And I had put – our house was too warm. The stuff was starting to get moldy. Oh. And so I put it all out in our detached garage and this freeze happened. And I went out there and had one of those oh crap moments where I ended up having to throw the majority of my stuff away because it had all frozen and rotted, which was terribly depressing. so I vowed that I wouldn't get it again until I had a proper place to store it because – I mean, that stuff will get you through winter. It's like, and I also did donate a bunch of it to the food bank because I mean, it was an obscene amount of stuff for like $120. Wow. And I took a 20-pound bag of potatoes and a 20-pound bag of onions to the food bank because I was like, we're never going to get through this. There are two of us and we will just never make it through all this. So I think unless you're a family that is purely vegetarian or vegan, I think it's a smart idea to share CSAs. I've always, or if you have a big family, you know, if you're feeding six people every day, then yeah, get your own CSA. But if you're only two people or two people and a small child, you know, I think it's a really great idea if you want to dip your toe in the CSA pool to share it with another family or see if you can get a half share or a small share. You know, I think, especially in Western Montana, the idea of local and organic is near and dear to so many people's hearts that I imagine there are, you know, make some new friends with a CSA, you know, or, you know, farmers might be willing to work with you if you, or have somebody else who wants a CSA, wants to try it out, but maybe doesn't necessarily think they're going to eat all the vegetables, you know, just ask people.
The other nice thing about sharing with somebody is, I heard this podcast where they talked about what makes somebody a good CSA candidate, which mm-hmm. I did not, because they said that you have to be, you know, prepared to be at the pickup at the certain time on a regular schedule. And that just doesn't work for me. But if I had somebody to share it with and I only had to go to the pickup drop like twice a month instead of once a week.
Yeah, you could.
That would work better. Yeah, that would be nice if somebody. Well, and then you just had to go to your friends and get it from their kitchen or, you know, however you were going to work it out.
Yeah, that's the Harlequin. Actually, I used to belong to a gym in Missoula and all my friends go to the same gym. Harlequin actually makes a stop at the gym for a produce drop off simply because there are so many of us signed up from the gym for the CSA. So it was worth it to them to say, hey, if enough of you guys sign up, we'll make a drop here. And that makes it really easy for us because we're all there at the same time. And it's really easy for us to split it up. But yeah, when you we did that thing in Cut Bank. What was it called?
Bountiful Baskets.
Bountiful Baskets. That's right. And so we did that. And that was, I think, every other week. Mm-hmm. And I have to say the Bountiful Basket in Cut Bank was far better than the Bountiful Basket I have tried in Missoula. Like for the same amount of money, I got about half the amount of produce here. And it was, I think it was just because this one was starting out. So maybe they have it dialed in. I might try it again over the winter. But that's a really great way too. If you're in a small town in Montana, Bountiful Baskets comes through most small towns. Like they were going to Haver and Shelby and Cut Bank and Browning.
And they come through here, and a friend of mine, she was telling me all about it, and she said it's really easy. You just order online. Like,
yeah.
She gets her thing, but there's, like, some things she can order. And I think they even have bread, I want to say,
they
or something.
They do. So it's really great. Like, you can get...
She was just raving about it.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it up in Cut Bank because it was the best produce I'd seen up there in 2 years. You know, the Hutterites would have some produce sometimes. And the... Cut Bank had a farmer's market in the summer, but it was a pretty short season, I think. It was never during the school year when we were there.
I went to the farmer's market a couple of times.
Because I would end up coming back to Missoula for the summers.
Have been like the very end of spring or something.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, we did Bountiful Basket that the whole second year we were up there. My roommate Amanda and I did. And it's great because it's, I want to say $19 mm-hmm. for this huge, I mean, our first one covered our entire kitchen table. It was just glorious and every manner of imaginable vegetable. And then you could do these, you could do an organic Bountiful Basket for, I think, $24 or something. It was just a couple bucks more, but then, yeah, you could add on, they'd have like an Asian pack where you could get Thai basil and chilies and garlic and anything like related to Asian food. And sometimes they would have like a picnic pack. I still get the emails from them and they had like a 4th of July pack, which had cherries and watermelon. I think hot dog buns, you know, something, all these things you'd use for a barbecue. And, they also do add-ons of bread or grain, tortillas, and you can get cases of peaches, cases of apples or mangoes. It's just different every week. It's so great. And, you know, you can get a case of mangoes or whatever for $20, which is pretty ridiculously cheap.
Yeah.
And if you do go to their website, I think it's bountifulbasket.org, I want to say, they explain how their whole system works. And, it's just a really great program. It gets a lot of great food to people who have never had access to it before. And I cannot support that enough.
What do you do with a case of mangoes, Marissa?
Well,
do you chop them up and freeze them for smoothies?
I would make margaritas to start.
Margaritas? Mango margaritas?
Oh, they're so good. I would chop a bunch up and use them for smoothies. I would also chop a bunch up and make like a mango habanero salsa and maybe even can that. It's simple. It's mangoes. Habanero chili peppers, which are really super hot, so you don't want to use too many of them. a little bit of red onion, garlic, cilantro, maybe a little red pepper. And that goes great on fish tacos or even just with chips, you know. But I would probably make a few cans of that. And then I would also probably just eat a few mangoes raw. I mean, just straight up with a spoon because they're delicious. And if you're super ambitious, you could always dehydrate them. Dried mangoes are great. But I don't have the patience to dehydrate things.
Got a trick for cutting a mango? Because they can be kind of tough with that big pit if somebody's never cut a mango.
You know, I still struggle with mangoes. The best way to do it, though, you take a mango and you cut it like you would an avocado from top to bottom and all the way around. Okay. And you, I mean, in theory, if it's ripe, it's easier to twist off, kind of. But you're still going to have some of the flesh clinging to that seed in the middle. But what I have found is if when you get the half mango in your hand, if you crosshatch it with a knife and then scoop it out with a spoon, and that's how I cut an avocado too. It's just a lot easier to get the pit out with the avocado. That is, I think, the easiest way to cut a mango.
Okay, cool. That's what I do too.
Yeah, and then
I crosshatch it, and then I kind of, I don't know, invert the skin sorta and peel it off. I don't know about the spoon thing, but kind of pop it out almost. Yeah. I love mangoes. But I don't know what I would do with a case.
They're so good. Yeah. Well, the first mango I ever had, I was home from college and I was at my best friend's house in Whitefish, and her older sister was home too, and we had mangoes and we had tequila, and so we made homemade mango margaritas, and that was the first time I ever had mango, and it was delicious. And it's so simple too. It's crushed ice, mangoes, and tequila in a blender, and there you go. You have a nice summer cocktail.
Awesome. All right. Yeah. Well, I think that's a great way to end our Friday afternoon.
I agree.
Well, thanks, Marissa. So maybe I'll talk to you next Friday, or we'll figure this out. But yes. I think listeners will like this. I hope
I have some knowledgeable information to share.
Absolutely. All right. Say goodbye.
And then, too, if people want to ask me questions or want me to talk about something specific on the show, they are welcome to email me thekitcheninmissoula@gmail.com. It's a simple address to remember. So if somebody wants me to talk about something specific, I'd be happy to do that.
Excellent. Thanks, Marissa.
All right. Yep. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com. Like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. Thanks again for listening, and grow local.